Welcome to After Dark with Rob and Andrew on America Out Loud, available on iHeartRadio, Spotify, Stitcher, Pandora, or Apple Podcasts. Or head on over to the website, AmericaOutLoud.com, and check out the articles and podcasts. And please share those on social media. Some great writers, some great podcasts up on AmericaOutLoud.com. We're so excited for the show tonight because Green Beret, Gold Star husband, and candidate for Congress in Washington State, Joe Kent, is joining us once again. We're going to have him come on and get his thoughts on this horrific Afghanistan withdrawal. But in breaking news, Joe has officially been endorsed by President Trump. So congratulations to Joe Kent. We're so excited to have him on tonight. You know, Rob, we interview a lot of great candidates, but the first time we had Joe on, he really stood out. This guy is America first. He has a background in the military. He's got the look. He's got it all to be a big star for years to come. I'm a big believer in everything I've seen from Joe Kent so far. Wouldn't you agree?
I agree completely. I want to say also, I also heard that recently President Trump endorsed Joe Kent. And I'm glad that he did because we need patriots like Joe on the Hill. And the last time he was here, he told us why he was running. He also told us about his opponent, Butler, who really hasn't done anything at all but self-serve herself. She wanted to impeach the president. She only comes out, so it seems, when it's going to be beneficial for her. It's time that we get true Republicans on the Hill. And I've been following Joe ever since he appeared on our show. He's on Facebook. He's very active on Facebook and on Twitter. And he just comes straight at you, tells you the way it is, because he has experienced a lot of this stuff that we're seeing right now. And when I say this stuff, meaning the military, he knows what a true commander is like. Unfortunately, he lost his wife, who also served in the military, and he met with President Trump. And we're going to ask him about that because we hear right now that the military families had met with Joe Biden. The only thing they heard was about Beau Biden, who died, God rest his soul, of cancer. Now, I'm sure that affected Joe Biden. But when you're speaking to a military family about their loss, a loss that unfortunately you caused because of your actions or lack of leadership, it's not a time to speak about your son. It's time to listen and understand, and that's it. If you have nothing to say, don't say anything. And I am forever reminded when President Trump met with the military families and how the media blew it out of proportion and saying, oh, well, he said this and he did that. They just fabricated a huge story, a huge lie. Even to this moment, they're doing the exact same thing. If anyone were to say that what happened in Afghanistan, it was predicted and that's the outcome we wanted, stop lying. 13 servicemen killed, that's not the outcome we wanted. Leaving the country with their tail between their legs, that's not the outcome we wanted. Yes, we were there for 20 years. And yes, things weren't ideal. And yes, President Trump said that he wanted our troops out of Afghanistan, the longest war on our calendar. Yes, he said it. But there were conditions that had to be met. And you know what, Andrew? The Taliban, ISIS, Al-Qaeda, they knew that when Trump said something, his word was his bond. And if they didn't do it, I'm sorry, deal's off. You're going to get bombed. But with Joe Biden, they looked and saw a weak, frail man. I don't take pride in saying this about President Biden. He's supposed to be the leader of the free world. But right now, he doesn't look like that. And I'm always amazed by the fact that whenever Democrats get into the House, they always try to lessen the role of the leader of the free world. Barack Obama, for 8 years, gallivanting around the country, bowing down to leaders on an apology tour. For what? What are you apologizing for? For being an American? If you don't want to be an American, why did you run for the presidency? When the world is in need, who do they look for? Who do they look to? America. What is wrong with that? It's so interesting that so many people around the world want to come to America. America, whom the Democrats have said is racist. Really? Well, if we're so racist, why are you trying to bring all those Afghanistanians here? Why are you allowing people to come in from the southern border? And when they come, you would think, listen to this, Andrew, you would think they would place them in blue states, blue cities, but they don't. You know where they drop them off? Red states, red cities. Now, why, pray tell, would they do that? Are they trying to change the demographic? Folks, you got to wake up, and we got to face the facts as to what's happening before our eyes. The world that the Democrats, the woke Democrats, the woke commanders-in-chief want to create, it's a world that causes destruction. It's a world that causes strife. We need a few good men and women who are willing to stand up against all cost and say, here I am, I will go. That's what we need. True patriots, not rhinos. And there are a lot of rhinos on the Hill. We need true patriots that are willing to go that extra mile. Joe is a true patriot. Despite all that he has lost, his lovely wife, left behind with two adorable sons, he's willing to step up, knowing that he's going to be attacked, but he's willing to step up and serve his country. He's willing to say, here I am, I will do it. And I'm glad that we have people like Joe willing to go out there and step out there and give yet again to his country. Not everyone is willing to do it. And then those who do it, they don't care. They want destruction. They don't care about America. They could care less about the Pledge of Allegiance. They could care less about our army, our military. They don't care. But Joe cares. And I'm glad he's on tonight to take out the time to come here and talk to us. Joe, thank you for your service. Thank you for stepping up again. Andrew and I say thank you. How are you tonight, Joe?
Yeah, very well. Thank you guys so much for having me on. Obviously, it's a big day. Excited to be here and getting to chat with you too.
Joe, tell us, how does it feel getting the endorsement of the 45th president of the United States?
You know, honestly, it's a great honor, and I'm just excited and honored, but it also, you know, makes me recommit to this and to everybody that supported me so far. And then really to everybody that we left behind, not just physically left behind in Afghanistan, the disgrace that is, but all my friends, all my brothers and sisters in arms that I lost over the years in this long war. And then my late wife, obviously, I consider what I'm doing right now a continuation of the oath I took 23 years ago to support and defend the Constitution. And it is for their legacies, the legacies of my wife and everyone we lost in these wars overseas. I mean, that's why I'm fighting, and because I have two young sons that lost their mother when they were very young. And this country that is being destroyed right now by the sheer evil of the left and just the hubris and the greed of the establishment is not something I'm willing to turn over to my sons. And I know there's an army of patriots that are behind me. So getting President Trump's, you know, endorsement, obviously it's a great honor, especially the juncture of my life that I met President Trump at Dover, and the relationship that we started there, based on, you know, not just his personal compassion, which I'll never forget, but also the fact that he was willing to listen to me coming off the fresh off the battlefield. I had literally just flown in from one of our engagements overseas to receive my wife's body at home at Dover, him listening to me, that I was the words I had to say about how the establishment was turning against him, and that he got it right, that his policies, his gut feelings, his observations, and his strategy that he was trying to implement was right and incorrect. So it's amazing to see that kind of come to, you know, come full circle here. You know, he mentioned it in the endorsement, but he actually told me that day that, hey, you should go into politics. And I kind of laughed it off. But then we find ourselves in this moment. So it's really a kind of a cool thing, but also it makes me kind of double back down on my commitment to all this, because now I have the 45th president, President Trump, behind me, but also, you know, expecting me to bring home a win for the America First. But I'm proud to bear that weight.
Joe, before that President Trump planted that seed in your head that you should run for Congress or get into politics, has it ever been anything that you considered before?
No, not at all. I mean, actually quite the opposite. I had intended, I was already working, you know, in the CIA, and I had intended to stay kind of in the shadows serving the country. I thought maybe someday when I got a little bit too old to do field work, maybe I'd have a higher leadership position in the national security realm, because I felt passionately about a more I think, rational, restrained foreign policy, the type that President Trump actually brought into fruition. But I never in a million years, even as I was leaving government service and starting to kind of speak out on behalf of President Trump, I did not see running for office in my future. Trump offered me a job in a second Trump administration on the National Security Council or in Department of Defense as an appointee. So I was eager for that. And then obviously the election was stolen and all that. But I really didn't seriously think about running for office until the woman I'm running against, Jamie Herrera Butler, you know, voted for the impeachment of President Trump. And then it was one of those things where it's not like, okay, maybe I should wait for the right timing and do some research. It was like, I have to do this. If I don't do this, then we're going to lose the country. So let's figure it out. And that's what I've been doing since February.
So that was the right time, like you said, when you realized what she was doing, self-serving, not listening to the people or being for the people, but for herself. And your wife, just, you hadn't been too long losing. How was it, like a year ago that she was killed?
It was January of 2019. So during 2019, a little over 2 years, yeah.
So when you see what happened recently in Afghanistan and you having brethren that had served in the military, what are your immediate thoughts when you saw that all at once we're just going to pull out and then to see it fall? Now, we knew that it was going to fall at some point because it's an unstable region, but the way it happened, what are your thoughts about that, Joe?
What we just witnessed in Afghanistan over the last 2 weeks are, to me, it's nearly 20 years. It's nearly two decades of lies coming unraveled. The lies were always very, very thin once you saw behind the curtain. And if you went and fought in these wars, you quickly realized that our whole endeavor of building nations and regime change, primarily regime change in Iraq, but the nation building project in both Iraq and Afghanistan and a couple other places, was mostly built on lies. It was the idea that we could go over and remake these governments in our image. That had been proven to not be the case time and time again, but we continued to perpetrate it because there's so much money, there's so many careers tied up in this narrative that it can be done. So I honestly wasn't surprised that this happened. What surprised me I wasn't surprised that the Taliban took back over. I was surprised how two factions of what I'll call the permanent ruling class, the establishment, whatever you want to call it, who normally work in lockstep together, they there was kind of a friction point. So the military industrial complex has cooperated very well with the left. They were able to get Obama to not just keep the wars going, but also to expand the wars primarily into Libya, a new surge in Afghanistan after a promised withdrawal and more commitments in Afghanistan, a reinvasion of Iraq. So the national security establishment, when Biden came into office, they were convinced that they could get Biden to buy off on more war, especially because Joe Biden came in and he realized that President Trump's foreign policy actually was pretty solid. There was even some pretty heavy critics of Trump that said, like, hey, this guy didn't start any new wars. He actually, and he took care of some major terrorist threats without getting us further engaged. So Biden saw that. And as opposed to just saying, hey, I want to do the best thing for America, Trump negotiated a deal that would have had us out of there in May. And Trump did that from a position of strength. We had fought the Taliban long and hard, and we had come to a point where there hadn't been a U.S. KIA by hostile fire in over a year. And had the military been serious about getting us out of there, they would have started this withdrawal operation. They would have planned it, and it would have been turnkey, ready to go in May. That's not the case at all, because the military industrial complex knew that they could convince Biden to stay a little bit longer. And Biden knew that he couldn't go with Trump's deal. If he went with Trump's deal, that would just be really a vindication of the Trump foreign policy. So we had to come in there and say, hey, I'm going to do something different. For a political reason, political symbology, I want to have this great speech on September 11th that I ended our longest war. So he asked the military and said, hey, can the Afghan military hold? Will it hold for just 3 or 4 more months? And they looked at him and they lied to his face. And they said, yes, sir, it certainly will. Because they didn't think the military industrial complex didn't think Biden was going to do it. That's evident, because they didn't plan on any kind of withdrawal whatsoever. And so once Biden started this withdrawal in Afghanistan, you saw that they were not ready. The military had zero plan whatsoever. When the military plans something, we can actually execute it. When you see a failure like this, it's because the leaders failed to actually implement the plans, and they obviously weren't clearly communicating down the chain of command what their intent was, because their intent was to stay.
Wow.
Yeah. And so when Biden dropped the hammer and said, let's get everybody out, I don't care, they were not ready. And then Biden's, the civilian side of his national security state, they don't care, because they don't care about America looking badly or poorly or weak, because they are globalists at their heart. Blinken, Sullivan, Austin's more of a yes man, a guy that will implement anything the boss says. I dealt with him when he was a general. He's not an intelligent man. I mean that candidly. I don't mean that to insult him. I'm just saying he's not a he's sort of political, but he's a very much a yes man. But Sullivan, Blinken, and those guys, they believe America is a country in decline. So they have no issue with us getting put in this position. And so these things all collided, and it made the whole house of cards just come undone.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because we have spoken about Blinken, Lloyd Austin, and Mark Milley. I don't know what your thoughts are on him, but I have felt that the three of them should resign, tender their resignation immediately. Lloyd Austin came out and gave an interview not too long ago saying that people look at him and they say, well, can he do the job because of his color? I'm like, well, no. Now that what has recently happened, I think that's a fair ask. Can you do the job? And now we know that you can't do the job. I don't know how he made it as far as he has, other than the fact that, like you said, he's a yes man. He's a globalist. And yes men will always find their way climbing up the ladder, because they're going to yes everybody. They're not going to ruffle any feathers. Right. They're going to say what the other person wants to hear. And Mark Milley, I would gather, is the same way.
Exactly the same way. Yeah.
That he's
Milley's the same. Yeah, Milley's the same way. Austin's the same way. Like these guys know the incentive system in DC has been to essentially stay center left, leftish, but you want to always be in these different wars. You always want to be building different armies and building different governments, because that's where the money is. Any kind of restraint, any kind of limited counterterrorism with a limited amount of boots on the ground, there's no money in that. And Lloyd Austin, when he retired from the military, he went right under the board of Raytheon. Exactly. That's what these guys do. So Mattis left and resigned in disgrace, or resigned because he was so sick of Trump. He went right under the board of a major defense contractor as well.
See, you know, that has to stop.
That's the game.
That has to stop. These guys, they get there. They know how to play the game. Right. They're criminals. And then they will leave, and they're serving on these boards, making all of this money. And what have they done for the American people? I can't even envision them being in war.
That's the DC system. When these wars started, I believe the military was just a very sharp tool that was ready to go in and ready to strike and avenge things from 9/11. But then you had the neoconservative think tanks, and you had the Rumsfelds, who knew exactly how the system worked, and they laid out this plan for nation building, and then it became addictive. And then you saw the left get in on it. Joe Biden was a big advocate from the Senate Foreign Relations Committee pushing it. And so this has become the uniparty status quo. And so I really do think when Biden's political team decided that his political need, because he's in such a bad way politically right now with the economy, with the border crisis, with the legitimacy of his election, he wanted this September 11th speech so badly, because ending the wars, as unpopular as it is with the DC establishment, it's very popular across the political aisles with the American people. So Biden was like, you know, who cares what happens? I just want this political win, and everyone's going to go along with me because I'm the establishment guy. He didn't think the military was going to screw him like this. And the military, you can see how callous they are, that to get their political objective met of more war, they will sacrifice their own soldiers and say, well, it wasn't me, and you can't criticize us, because if you do that, then you're criticizing the 13 Marines that died and that were killed. It's a very callous trick that they play this way. And so I want people to really recognize that ultimately this is on Joe Biden. Had he just not been full of hubris, he would have stuck with President Trump's plan. And even going back a year, when the media and the intelligence community was leaking and telling us that Putin was putting Russian bounties on our soldiers in Afghanistan, and that if Trump left Afghanistan, that would be somehow doing Putin a favor. They lied about that. That stopped a withdrawal that Trump had planned. That stopped it in its tracks. Congress voted to for us to keep our troops there. It was a big deal. And then we just somehow memory hold that. And then when Biden started talking about withdrawal, they actually had the audacity to admit to us that they made all that up. So there's multiple times when a president, President Trump, attempted to end this war. And then because of political machinations, Biden wanted to extend it just a little bit, but the military industrial complex wanted us to stay there. And so like the result is this perfect storm that resulted in these 13 brave Americans being killed because of this top-down culture that was clashing, that said, like, we have to, the only mission here is to get all these unvetted Afghans out. And the military didn't plan for withdrawal. And the military threw out all of the knowledge that we had of being able to defend these positions from suicide bombers because they were being driven from the top down. Just get as many Afghans out as you possibly can and make the administration look good. So it's just a perfect storm of the establishment's absolute hubris and lies and greed.
Indeed, a perfect storm. And it's hard to fathom that 20 years, these military men, these generals, knowing that this was a failed mission as far as being able to build up the army in Afghanistan, all of them telling each administration, it's working, it's working, it's working, but it wasn't working. Now the truth is coming out. And then I heard Joe Biden had a conversation with the president of Afghanistan, and he said, things aren't going well here. However, we've got to spin it. That's the readout. Now, if you think back to when Trump was in office, he was impeached for a phone call. And now Joe Biden is on the record telling the leader of another country to lie, to make up a story and say that everything is fine, when now we see that it wasn't. Why aren't people up in arms? Why isn't the media? The media is protecting him. They're coming out now. And I said this, Andrew, I said it. They came out strong and saying, oh, Joe Biden, he messed up, he failed. And now I hear them saying, well, he did the best he could. And you know, this was Trump. Well, if it was Trump, look at everything else that Joe changed that Trump had done. He changed everything. But this, you decided to leave this? What kind of leader are you, man? If you didn't have the fortitude or the insight to say all things, I need to change this. Now, I know I changed the border crossing, but I definitely need to change this. But he didn't.
No, that's exactly right. And where is the accountability? Like we've just caught these guys in lies after lie after lie. When the Afghan papers were released that, you know, really laid out and documented and very clear with clear evidence that the generals at every level for years have been lying about the progress in Afghanistan. That came out in 2019. And it got very little coverage. I mean, I applaud the Washington Post for covering it, but people that don't, it was just like this weird niche of people that follow national security matters that really picked up on it. It didn't gain any traction. And you're right. There was a couple of days there where Biden was getting some blame in the media, which kind of shows you how the media really, really likes these forever wars too, just as much as the military industrial complex does. But now they've kind of gotten back in lockstep to protect this administration that they really brought into power at all costs. I mean, that transcript of that record that he had with the Afghan president before the Taliban took over, it's incredibly damning. I mean, Trump would have been, you know, impeached six times over for it, but we can't even get Congress to come back into session and start calling oversight hearings. I mean, if Congress had 1 ounce of commitment to the oaths that they took, they would be having nonstop hearings right now with different commanders on the floor of Congress, and they would be demanding declassification of everything going back, you know, over the last year of what's happened in Afghanistan, you know, if not further. Milley would be on the carpet. Austin would be on the carpet. The CENTCOM commander who flippantly referred to the suicide attack as like, well, yes, we knew this type of thing could happen. So, you know, let's all just move on. Like, those guys should be called to the carpet. There's no reason why there shouldn't be accountability for this. And the media is doing everything they can to put this back in the memory hole, because Biden's calculus, his whole political strategy right now, is that the American people are disconnected from war and foreign policy. And come 22 and come 24, they'll have forgotten about this. And he can just say, but I ended the endless war.
Absolutely. And that is the reason why they're going to hit the reset button shortly after Labor Day. And that's another reason why Congress has not reconvened to say, we need to have oversight on this. You're correct. You are correct, Joe, that if President Trump were in office, they would already be on the Hills setting up their different committees as to how they're going to investigate this. But they received a memo, more than likely, from whom else but Barack Obama, saying, lay low, just let this roll over, don't say anything, don't reconvene, wait until after Labor Day, and they're American people, short-term memory. They'll forget all about this, but definitely blame Donald Trump. Blame him for everything. Now, had Joe been successful in pulling everyone out, he would have taken a victory lap on 9/11. Well, like you said, Joe, he would have said, I did this, and look at me, and I did it. But he can't say it now. It's a failed mission. He failed, and as a result, 13 soldiers dead, Americans still behind enemy lines. And then to come out and to blame them and to say, well, we told them in March, April, and May to get out of there. This is on them. It's unbelievable to blame Americans because of his shortcomings, and the media is complicit. As always, they are complicit. And covering,
I never thought in a million years that we would leave Americans behind, and then days later there'd be a sitting president on national TV blaming those Americans for being hostage. I mean, yeah, sometimes Americans put themselves in bad situations, but we don't ever talk about that until they're home and they're safe. We move heaven and earth to try to get them out, and that's the end of the story because they're Americans. And I know every single service member, every single intelligence officer that was there on the ground, that's what they were thinking. And that's the only thing they were thinking, is they themselves were being forced into airplanes to leave. I guarantee you that was a gut-wrenching flight for those guys. Not to mention, of course, a gut-wrenching flight for the Marines and the soldier and the sailors' comrades who had to put their friends in a flag draped coffin and fly them home. But the rest of them that knew that they left without accomplishing their one mission of getting Americans out, I can't imagine what those troops are going through right now. And then to see Biden say that on national TV, disgrace isn't even the right word.
Yeah, we're seeing that all over. And Joe Biden's mistakes, he abandoned the Bagram Air Force Base, the weapons that has been left behind, maybe even service dogs. It just seems like China is the one who continues to benefit. We are live here on After Dark with Robin Andrew, and we are with Trump-endorsed Joe Kent, who's running for Congress in the great state of Washington. And you are tuned into After Dark with Robin Andrew, available on America Out Loud via iHeartRadio, Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, or download the America Out Loud app to keep track of all the great shows. We'll be back with more from Joe Kent.
Because of COVID-19, the average American worries about their immune health 4 times a day. That's 112 times per year. To minimize the worries, leading nutritional supplement company, Healthy Cell, created Immune Super Boost, an immune supplement that contains 15 full doses of science-backed nutrients like vitamin C, zinc, elderberry, and echinacea, all in a one-a-day pill-free gel pack. It tastes great, is convenient on the go, and it's more natural too, without chemical binders, fillers, and coatings. Supporting a strong and resilient immune system can be simple. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of Immune Super Boost. That's HealthyCell.com, HealthyCell, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Today, America stands at the crossroads of history. Our actions will determine the fate of our nation. Well, that journey starts here and starts now. We invite you to join us in making the ultimate difference. Subscribe to our podcast and newsletters. Turn notifications on and stay in the know. You'll find all that back at AmericaOutLoud.com. Liberty and justice for all.
And we're back after dark with Robin Andrew, and our guest tonight is Joe Kent. Joe is a Green Beret, and he's sharing with us his experience being in the military, going out and serving the country. It takes a special kind of person to say, I'm willing and ready to serve. Many people go down that line or that road and say they're going to do it. Half of them don't even make it through basic training. But then there are those that do. I take my hat off to them because I know that they're being sincere. And as Colonel Julie Hall said, they know their mission. They know what they're doing. Now, we Americans might not like the mission, but we should always respect our men and women because they're going to pay the ultimate sacrifice, their families, their loved ones, time away from them. They know what they're doing, but no one expects not to come back home. There's always that prayer, God protect them, bring them back home. And when I hear the stories, even the stories more recently, when we learn that 13 soldiers, unfortunately, were killed, all these military families in America, praying and hoping, don't let it be mine, please God. And then to hear those footsteps on their porch and the knock on the door, I can't imagine. Yes, I have lost loved ones that were close to me, but I cannot imagine hearing those steps, the knock of the door or the doorbell, late at night, right before dinner, whichever way it was, the door opens. And when it opens, you know who's there and you know what they come to say. That gut feeling, that emptiness. I mean, I'm trying to describe it now, but I've never been there. And then to go to Dover Base to receive your loved one's body. And then to see the leader of the free world standing there, checking his watch. No, I know that a lot of people are trying to give him excuse and say, well, he was looking at the rosary that he wears on his arm in honor of his son, Bo. Really? No, don't give him any excuses. Even the White House press secretary didn't give him any excuses because there was nothing to say. Checking his watch as if, though, I don't have time for this. Maybe he didn't know what was happening. Maybe he didn't know what was going on. But someone should have tapped him on his shoulders. Jill should have. She was standing right next to him, Andrew. And she should have said, Joe, I gave him a look. But you know, maybe he wouldn't have noticed because they were sitting there with those ridiculous masks on, as if they're for a fashion statement, when we all know that they'll get behind closed doors behind the camera and throw them off. Shame, shame, shame. Those families, 13. And this is all Joe could do for them. And as I said in the last hour, when he met with them, it was all about him and his son, Bo. Now, if you recall, during the campaign, that's all he talked about, his son, Bo. And I think someone gave him that line and said, if you want to be able to connect with the people, talk about your son.
Well, you don't want to talk about Hunter, that's for sure.
Oh, God, no, you don't want to talk about him. He's a derelict. But talk about, use Bo, his memory. Unbelievable. So you're going to get those families together, and that's all you can talk about. And then when they try to get you back on subject, you look as if though you're not concerned. Joe, you've experienced that, unfortunately, with your wife. And again, we thank her for her service. Could you, if you don't mind, take our listeners through what were you feeling that day when you received her body? You had to tell your sons. And I remember you saying that Trump made the right decision. But to receive her body, and then you went to meet the president, and you said you didn't expect to meet him. You didn't know it was going to be, you thought it was going to be something informal. But that one-on-one. And he listened and he had compassion, something that the media tells us he doesn't have. He wasn't born with it. He can never get it, but he does have it. Can you share that with us, please?
Having to go to Dover, it's very solemn, even if you aren't receiving a loved one, if you're just there for a dignified transfer. And that's the process it's called when you receive a fallen service member from overseas. It's a solemn place. And so I my whole military career, I never envisioned that I would be there, especially to receive my wife's body. But it happens within a couple of days of the person losing their life. So I had been overseas when my wife was killed, myself serving. And so I had a scramble to get back home to be able to be there in time. And so I was it was kind of a whirlwind for me, but it was a very, you know, heavy day. I just had to tell my children that they weren't going to see their mom again. They were 1 and 3. So it was, you know, a different process than I think a lot of families have because they were so young. It was hard for them to absorb. And then I had to drive out. I was living in DC at the time, And so we drove out to Dover. And I didn't think I was going to meet the president. They told us the president was going to be there. So already I was like, well, that's pretty neat. I figured he was just going to be out there on the tarmac, on the airfield to render the salute, which would have been just that. That was kind of all I expected. And then right before the plane landed carrying my wife and three other Americans remains, an aide or someone from the White House came by and just said, hey, if any of the families want to meet with the president, he's happy to meet with you one-on-one. And I was like, well, that's pretty surprising. And so I said, yeah, I would love to talk with him. Cause I had just kind of come off the battlefield. I had just started my second career in the CIA. I became a Trump supporter because of his stances on foreign policy, but I had seen the establishment from the inside kind of turning against Trump in a way that really shocked me and disgusted me. And then it cost my wife her life. So obviously I was pretty passionate about that. And, you know, I kind of thought to myself, well, here's your chance. You know, this is your chance to get to talk to the man. And so I said, yeah, I would love to talk to him. And I figured I'd never met a president before, being in the military for, you know, at that over 20 years at that point, even if you meet a colonel, sometimes there's handlers, you know, there's a captain or a major or somebody's going to come and say, hey, what do you want to say to him? Here's what he's going to say to you. Here's where you stand, things like that. And so I figured with the president, there was going to be an entire entourage. I've had entourages for generals before. And so they direct me to a room to go wait in. And it's a, you know, just a normal room that they where they keep the families while they're waiting for their loved ones to be returned to them. And, you know, a minute later in walks President Trump just by himself, you know, no Secret Service entourage or anything. And that kind of surprised me, but he was extremely compassionate and in a different perspective I have, I think, from a lot of folks that had been in my shoes is that I had seen a lot of leaders over the years deal with losing people on their watch. And for me, you get a feeling, you can tell the leaders that genuinely care that someone was killed on their watch on a personal level. You can tell the ones that it weighs heavily on their soul, that these men and these women were real people with real families, and decisions that they made were a part of what got them killed, whether it was their fault or not. You can tell. And then you can tell there's a lot of other leaders that they just get so wrapped up into the career aspect of the military. You can tell the ones that are worried and it's weighing on them because they're concerned with their careers. And so I feel like I have a pretty good sense of that. And when I looked into President Trump's eyes, when he came in to that room and he said, hey, Joe, like we knew each other. And he said, hey, I'm really sorry about your wife. Shannon seems just like an amazing person. You know, she's a fellow New Yorker. He had read enough about Shannon to you know, at least show me that he cared. And it was genuine. And like I said, when I looked into his eyes, I didn't see someone who was concerned about the optics, because had he been concerned about the optics, he would have come into that room with a cameraman. There would have been a way to spin it in his favor, but he literally just man to man was there. And I really appreciated that. And again, it's so many things that are just intangible. And we got to talk for about, you know, 10, 15 minutes plus. Eventually some other folks trickled in the room, like a nervous, it's funny now, cause like a nervous looking security, Secret Service guy, like came in the room and kind of looked at me real quick. And I don't know if he like had lost track of the president or something. But you know, just that personal touch there with Trump, and he did that with all the families. There was four of us there, which at the time was a lot. And I get it, with the 13, maybe an intimate setting wasn't as possible. However, I know had Trump been the president and 13 people would have gotten killed on his watch, he would have cleared his schedule and he would have gone there and just hung out with the families, because that's what President Trump does. You know, and so we had that moment. We talked for a good bit. And then we went out and we received the remains. They brought them off one at a time. And President Trump, and this is my wife was killed in January, so it's late January in Delaware. And it was a very cold day, and there was a heck of a wind, and everybody was just, you know, shaking, and it was not pleasant to be out on the flight line. And President Trump and everybody that was there with him stood there the entire time. They rendered the proper salute. They stood there with the utmost respect until all the coffins were gone. And then President Trump came back over. He walked across the flight line, walked back over to the families, shook hands, did some fist bumps, you know, and then headed out. And his staffers, you know, gave us cards and said, if you guys need anything, if there's any problems, let us know. And then later on, I mean, I developed a, you know, relationship with Trump to discuss national security matters. But later on, President Trump would invite Gold Star families into the residential wing for holidays. And there was never any media about it. And him and the first lady and his whole cabinet would be there usually. So I went over on Memorial Day, me and 50 other Gold Star families, and they fed us dinner, and President Trump just came and talked to people. And I think a day later on the first lady's website, I saw like one sentence that said, last night, the president and I were honored to host 50 Gold Star families. No photos, nothing, no hype, you know, and it's just disgraceful to see the fact that Joe Biden can't stand out there, you know, without his COVID mask for one, and then without glancing at his watch. And then when he does have the chance to meet with these families, he's on some tangent. Yeah. We're all sorry you lost Beau. I mean, that's tragic. I, as a father, you know, as a guy who lost a wife, just like Joe Biden did, like I do feel for him, but that's not the moment to bring that stuff up. You're there to show your support for those families, especially as a commander in chief. And you're there, if you put those 13 young men and women in harm's way and they died, your job is to stand there and represent the country. And he can't even hold that together. And you know what? I mean, I have a lot of animus against him for that. However, he shouldn't be there in the first place because he's just not mentally capable. Everyone knows that. Everyone sees that. That's the 100-pound elephant in the room, essentially, that no one wants to address, that it's basically senior abuse at this point, that we're putting up this feeble old man out there to do this. So it just makes a mockery of our country. And I can feel those families' anger. I mean, because they're intelligent people. Like they know that their kids didn't need to be over there to die in that situation. They knew their kids enlisted to go fight the nation's wars. And so they knew that they could come back home in that coffin draped in a flag. But to have it done like this, and then to have Joe Biden be so disrespectful, it just, again, this is another thing that's just watching our establishment just come crumbling down before us in the most humiliating and disgraceful way possible.
Something you said, I want to backtrack on. We never heard this about Trump, and I don't know if our listeners caught it. During the holidays, Trump and his wife would invite Gold Star family members to the White House for dinner. We heard nothing about it. And I'm sure that the media knew about it. Someone tipped them off, but they chose not to talk about it because they didn't want to humanize President Trump. They wanted to keep him cold. But I'm glad you shared that moment. You shared with us. There was nothing written about it in the media. No one said anything. And you just noticed that Melania had posted on social media, and that was it. And I remember hearing another Gold Star family member saying that, and this woman was Black, and she lost her son. And the media was like, oh, you know, she's going to go and she's going to give it to Trump. And when she came out, she said he was the most generous man. I felt that he felt my pain. He knew what I was going through. He listened, which is something that Joe did not do. My heart goes out to him for losing his son. I'm sure that hurt, but that's not the time to bring up Beau. It's time for you to listen because of you that those lives were lost. They gave their lives for the country under your watch. You made the decision to move forward. We want to get them all out of there right now. To remove the military men the way he did, and then to leave families, Americans there, how could you? Why would you? Why weren't you thinking? And then no apologies. It's, oh no, it was deliberate. As Tony Blinken said, it was deliberate. This was all done deliberately. To put American citizens in harm's way was deliberate? Really now? What else is deliberate that you guys are doing? That you don't care about Americans? You and the woke generals? But it was deliberate. It was deliberate that they left. I'm hearing now service dogs behind. Now, I'm sure they'll spin it some other way. Joe, let me ask you this, because we had Colonel Julie Hall on the show, and we asked her the same question about the weaponry that we left behind. Now the media is trying to spin it and say we rendered it inoperable. They can't use it. It's just left it all behind. Blackhawks. Is that customary that we just leave our weapons behind?
Well, it shouldn't be, but we did the exact same thing in Iraq. We just put a bow on it in Iraq and said, like, hey, this is a government that that we built despite losing 5,000 soldiers and lying about the reasons why we got into this war. We built this great Iraqi army. And then the first time they were tested, when ISIS rolled across the berm from Syria with a bunch of dilapidated, rusty AKs they stole from the Syrian army, all that new American equipment hit the ground real quick and ISIS picked it back up. So unfortunately, that's like the custom of these post 9/11 nation building wars, but it shouldn't be. That's why when I say it's evident to me as someone who spent a career in the military, that the military did not plan to have us out by May. They didn't plan to have us out by September. This is exactly what that looks like, because had we actually planned some form of a transition, then really maybe all we would see is that we left some small arms, maybe some like vehicles for the Taliban that they unfortunately get. But we would have had a deliberate plan to bring back our heavy equipment. But in particular, I really want to call people's attention to a lot of the technology that we left over there. There's been a few stories about the biometrics database, the biometrics tracking kits that we left over there. This stuff is fairly high tech, but it's also very potent, because we were registering all of our allies, all of our interpreters, all of our intelligence sources, all of our members of the military with this biometrics database. And this is something we need to investigate. I don't know how that ended up in the hands of the Taliban, but it's in the hands of the Taliban. And that is absolutely insane. That's literally probably going to get thousands of people at best executed, at worst tortured to death in the most medieval way possible, because this is the Taliban we're talking about. Also, a lot of the, I think, advanced communications that we gave them that come in the helicopters, advanced navigation systems. And then I believe we've even given them probably some signals intelligence technology that they now have their hands on. There was convoys heading into Iran with military gear that's going to be in the hands of the Iranians. Like, it's an absolute disgrace. And to me, it just points to the fact that when you see the generals come on TV and they're saying, like, we had planned this, like, no, you didn't. You obviously did not plan this. What they did, though, was they recognized what happened in Iraq. And this is what I want people to watch out for. What happened in Iraq was what I just said. We said that we had this great Iraqi army, and then the first time they were tested, ISIS came in, they threw down their weapons. But then what did we do? We justified, because we had no other choice, a whole nother war that expanded the Iraq war once more. It was the counter-ISIS mission. And honestly, and I fought in this, most of the counter-ISIS mission was us bombing U.S. equipment that ISIS had gotten. And they were able to take ground with that U.S. equipment. So now you're seeing the Pentagon say, like, well, maybe we would partner with the Taliban to do missions against this ISIS branch that's in Afghanistan, Islamic State, Khorasan Province, or ISIS-K, as some call it. You're seeing that narrative because it's the exact playbook now. It's this new playbook. You arm these armies for trillions of dollars and a lot of blood. And then worst case scenario, when it all goes to crap, because it was all based on lies anyways, don't worry. You get to have a whole nother set of military gear come back in and bomb it again. It is absolutely a sustainable business model if you're in the military industrial complex. And that's what's going on right here.
So are you saying that now that it's there, we can make, an excuse to go back and bomb it so that we re-enter the region?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. 100%. So the military, they didn't plan the withdrawal. They didn't plan any kind of transition because they figured, screw it. And then especially once Biden said, go ahead and get out now, the military basically threw a fit and said, fine, screw it. If this gets all screwed up, worst case scenario is we can convince Biden and the America Last national security team that, hey, we got great relations with the Taliban. We can partner with the Taliban to go take out ISIS. And so now all we have to do is keep beating this drum about ISIS, and we're going to get our intelligence about ISIS from who? The Taliban. And you saw that drone
strike.
That's
what's happening. Yeah, that's what's happening.
That's exactly what's happening. This is the playbook from Iraq. They know it. They know it works, and so they're going to do it again. Right. I mean,
that we're going to partner with the Taliban, and that they're going to help us, and they're going to help us get our people back, so that they can go back in and start this all over again. Andrew, this is insane.
Yeah, it really is. Joe, you spent over 20 years in the military. I'm sure you still have a lot of friends serving in the military. What are they saying about this whole debacle that happened in Afghanistan? Have they ever seen, or have you ever seen anything like this in all your years? You mentioned the botched Iraq withdrawal.
Yeah, guys are furious. With the Iraq withdrawal, there was a brief moment where it's sort of maybe, I mean, those of us that spent a lot of time on the ground there, we knew it wasn't going to hold. We knew that there was going to be some sort of a reckoning because we partnered in order to get out of Iraq. We partnered with this Shia government that was going out and committing crimes against humanity against the Sunni population, which radicalized them. So we saw this. It just didn't happen as fast in Iraq. So there was a little bit of people that maybe didn't remember or connect the dots as quickly. But we also didn't leave people behind in Iraq. We didn't. We had an agreement where we left some Americans there, but they were in secure locations that we could defend. There was a plan in Iraq. As much as I will criticize that all day long, the only thing that could make that plan look good is this Afghanistan withdrawal. So my friends that are still in right now, I mean, they're furious. I mean, all of us basically knew that the Taliban was going to come back. We knew that the Afghan military and government were nothing but, you know, a pet project for, it was a way to transfer wealth for the ruling class, for the military industrial complex. We never thought that our people would be left behind. That is the bottom line minimum. All of us expected it, when this went to crap, that we would at least get our people out, especially when the clock was ticking. It was horrible to give up Bagram, but had we given up Bagram, we had gone to Kabul and we would have had a forceful military commander who said, no, we are getting our people out. We will drive to our people. We will come up with rally points. And if you get in our way, we will kill you to get our people out. We will use decisive force. If we would have had that coming from the command, I think this would be a much different story. I frankly, even had we been able to get all of our people out and not put our people in a position where we had 13 of them get killed by a suicide bomber because they were prioritizing refugees, unvetted refugees over Americans, I actually would be like, you know what? We had to end the war. It wasn't pretty, but at least Biden got us out. I'll give him that much credit. But when he says he's not even going to go in and get the Americans out, when he is going to prioritize loading in all these refugees as opposed to Americans, it's just become an absolute disgrace. It's really, I mean, the morale is already low because of everything else that's going on in the military with the CRT indoctrination, the witch hunt, the partisan witch hunts with the installation of commissars and now this vaccine mandate. But now this, I mean, it is tanking morale. And right now, at the mid-level, we have a very battle-hardened force. These guys have fought. I mean, I spent most of my career fighting. The guys that are in the mid-levels right now and some of the upper levels, middle management, they're warriors. I mean, they've been fighting for two decades. And most of them that I still know, they're like, I'm getting out, man. I'm dropping my retirement paperwork. I was going to stay in for 25 years. Some of the junior guys I know that were kind of at the 10-year mark when I got out, they're like, hey, I'm not doing this for another 9 years just to get a pension. I'm leaving. I'm getting out of here.
Right, Joe, let me ask you this.
Yeah.
What would it take to correct this whole politicization of our military, this wokeness, which is ridiculous? Are there any men and women that are there that are willing to say, this has got to stop? We need to change the trajectory of the military, or we won't have a military. If we keep trying to push all of this nonsense, gays in the military, and they can do this and they can wear this and they can all that. We don't care. As Colonel Hall said, we just want them to serve. What you do in your private life, that's you. But trying to make the military woke and then tell the world that we're woke and we're wearing pink, I'm waiting for them to come out with pink fatigues. It's like, what is going on? What would it take to correct this, and can it be corrected?
I think it's going to take oversight. I mean, to expect for it to come from the military right now, I think it's kind of ridiculous, because the military has the ability to with the Uniform Code of Military Justice, to really squash any dissent. And we're seeing that play out right now with Colonel Scheller. He's the Marine that had the viral video, who's a lieutenant colonel. He's mid-management.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
And he said there needs to be accountability. And he's the it makes me furious. All credit goes to him, but it makes me furious that the highest level leader in our formation that said there needs to be accountability for these 13 brave troops getting killed is a lieutenant colonel. Like, a lieutenant colonel is a very mid-level management guy. He is not senior at all. There's lieutenant colonels that are essentially getting people cups of coffee at the Pentagon, you know, and I'm not belittling his rank. I'm just saying, why in the hell is he the senior guy that is calling this out and calling for accountability and even saying that he's willing to risk his rank for it. So that just shows you that it's not, it almost can't come from the military. We can't call on these people to do that. What we need is we need good oversight. And that's a big reason why I'm running for Congress. We need Congress to go in there, and Congress is empowered by the voters, or empowered by the American people, to say, hey, military, you will be accountable for this. You will stop having these CRT witch hunts. You will stop having this indoctrination, because your job is to fight and win our nation's wars, period. And the leaders that have been lying for years for the sake of their own ego, for the sake of their own ideological convictions, and for really personal gain in terms of making rank and getting that good job on the board of a defense contractor or at a think tank when they get out, holding them accountable. Morale is at an all-time low right now. If we saw accountability, if we saw the Secretary of Defense, Chairman of Joint Chiefs of Staff, CENTCOM commander, whoever was running ops in Kabul right now, get called to the floor of Congress and have them actually held accountable, and some of them forced to resign, some of them actually punished in the UCMJ, I think that we would see a surge in morale, because the troops then would know that, hey, the American people have my back and there is oversight. It's not just us against these corrupt generals, and your choice is, do I not serve, or do I serve this corrupt system? Because that's horrible, because then we're squandering the patriots that are willing to step up and go give their life for this country. And I fear the direction we head in as a society when you have the most patriotic, the most courageous people that are willing to go fight, that want, that are volunteering to go fight and die for this country, treated in such a way that they are no longer attracted to that fight. And I think that's incredibly dangerous. And if we don't correct that, we are going to destroy our country.
Thank you so much to our guest tonight, Joe Kant, who's running against Rhino Jamie Herrera Butler. We didn't even get a chance to talk about his race for Congress much, but you do want to support him. Jamie Herrera Butler, in case you did not know, voted to impeach President Trump. Joe, if people want to support your candidate and donate to you directly, what is the best spot they could go to do so?
This place is joekentforcongress.com.
joekentforcongress.com. And we appreciate Joe for joining us tonight. As we mentioned at the top of the show, he was just recently endorsed by President Trump. So a big congratulations to Joe Kent. He absolutely deserves it. And thank you all for joining us tonight after dark with Rob and Andrew. Check us out and all the other shows over at americaoutloud.com, who recently celebrated its fifth anniversary. You can also find America Out Loud on iHeartRadio, Spotify, or Stitcher. We will see you guys next time. And remember, stand for something or you will fall for nothing.